Hi, this is Richard Gere. Did you know there are more Buddhists than Episcopalians in America today? That the army now hires Buddhist ministers as chaplains. Chances are, whether you know it or not, you have Buddhist neighbors and friends. The following program on Buddhism in the United States weaves a fascinating tale of how this ancient philosophy has come to our shores and how it's affecting American art, literature, and life. I invite you to listen.
Buddhist? They worship the guy with the big belly, right?
I heard they all just want to disappear, tune out, and lose their ego or whatever, and just poof, go away.
Oh, they chant and meditate, and I think they're vegetarians.
Ah, well, if you ask me, they're pagans.
Asking non-Buddhists what Buddhism is will likely result in a wild assortment of interpretations and misinformation. Ask 100 Buddhists the same question, and you'll probably get 100 different answers. Buddhism encompasses philosophy, psychology, mysticism, metaphysics, religion, ritual, culture, and art. It is one of the world's oldest fields of thought.
When you ask a Buddhist teacher what what Buddhism means or what enlightenment means or anything like that, it's very difficult to get a straight answer sometimes. Buddhism is really more of a practice than a religion, as the way we think of it. There is a question question with lots of scholarly back and forth about whether Buddhism is in fact a religion or not, because there is no creator God at the center of religion. It's been called a non-theistic religion, and I think that in my own experience, Buddhism is really a practice rather than necessarily a religion. Which means that it teaches you the practice of meditation, the practice of enlightenment, of living in an enlightened way, and how to actually experience that. So it's about it's a very personal, intimate kind of thing. There's really nothing more intimate than sitting down by yourself on a cushion in the company of your own mind, and eventually most forms of Buddhism get to that point, even if they have if there's a lot of ritual and symbolism going on, but it all points in one direction.
Infinite gratitude to all things past, infinite service to all things present, infinite responsibility to all things future.
Buddhism by itself doesn't have any meaning. Buddhism teaches interdependence, how we're all interrelated. It's not a faith, again, with the supreme being that doesn't have all the answers to everything in this world, but simply is provides us with a different perspective, an encouragement to think in a much larger, more inclusive way that makes all of our beliefs and practices that much richer. So in this sense, Buddhism should not be seen as a competing religion or faith. I think there are many Christians who study Buddhism and find that they become a better Catholic or a better Protestant or a better Baptist because of that. But there's no replacing their God with one from Buddhism, because we don't have any. Ours are all quite temporary.
I think it's misleading to say that Buddhism is an atheism. I would say it's a non-theism. That is, the question of God doesn't really come up. It's not that it thinks about that there's a God and says, no, there isn't. It's just not the issue. In a way, we can sort of think of Buddhism being more parallel to something like psychology in the West, whereas insofar as Buddhism tries to look at how we are functioning as human beings and to see what the processes are and how we can reverse the negative processes.
Buddhism focuses on on the human being, and there is a deliberate de-emphasis of deities, gods, and heavens, and so on. The word Buddhism means to be awake, and it is to gradually become more awake of what's around you, and that's all that enlightenment really is.
The common ground of Buddhism is based mainly on Buddhist texts called sutras that were written down by followers after Buddha's death. These texts present guidelines for mindful living. The great body of Buddhist teachings is referred to as the Dharma, a word for which there are about 40 meanings and no exact translation in English.
A Dharma is a teaching, that is to say, Buddhist teaching. Actually, Dharma means law, you know. That's the original etymology of Dharma. And it's translated into Chinese and Japanese with the ideograph for law.
Robert Aitken Roshi is the head of the Diamond Sangha in Hawaii.
So in the early days of my Zen study in Japan, I would go to bookstores to try to find Buddhist books, and I would get lost in the law section because the ideograph on the spine is exactly the same. So, law is the way things are and the way things act and manifest and interact. So, you have those three meanings. Let's see, the third meaning of a Dharma is, the first is emptiness, second is the law of karma and interconnection, and the third is particularity and phenomena.
Buddhism is pragmatic. It's not, you know, some kind of airy-fairy kind of mystical, not mystical on that level, like you can, you know, eat enlightenment. If you have an enlightened mind and somebody puts a knife in your back, I think that's going to hurt. I think you're going to have to say, ouch.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real.
The cessation of suffering is referred to as nirvana, a damping of the fires of lust, hatred, and delusion. Nirvana is not a state of nothingness.
Living is easy with eyes closed.
It is not the Buddhist heaven. It is not even a place, but a state of mind.
It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me.
The actual practice of Buddhism has nothing to do with withdrawal from life. In fact, the teachings of Buddhism speak of that as the near enemy. The near enemy to loving kindness is attachment, where you separate yourself from some person or something that you love, and then you grasp it and try to control it, which is not true love.
The most beautiful images in Buddhism is the net of Indra, a Buddhist metaphor for interconnectedness. Like many Buddhist teachings, it has a corollary in some Native American beliefs. In this case, the web of grandmother spider that binds all things into a common destiny. Sogyal Rinpoche describes the net of Indra.
The Buddha compared the universe to a vast net woven of countless variety of jewels, of brilliant jewels, each with a countless number of facets. Each jewel reflects in itself every other jewel in the net and is, in fact, one with every other jewel. Think of a wave in the sea. Seen in one way, it seems to have a distinct identity, an end and a beginning, a birth and a death. But seen in another way, the wave itself doesn't really exist, but is just the behavior of the water, empty of any separate identity, but full of water. So when you really think about the wave, you come to realize that it is something made temporarily possible by wind and water, and is dependent on a set of constantly changing circumstances. You also realize that every wave is related to every other wave. Nothing has any inherent existence of its own when you really look at it. And this absence of independent existence is what is called emptiness.
Emptiness, shunyata. This concept lies at the core of Mahayana Buddhism. Mahayana is one of the three main divisions of Buddhism. It represents a major development in Buddhist doctrine, marked by a great flowering of new Buddhist thought. Mahayana gave new importance to lay practice and expanded the idea of the bodhisattva, who seeks enlightenment not for himself or herself alone, but aspires to Buddhahood solely to help others. The emergence of saint-like bodhisattvas gave rise to devotional cults honoring various mythical Buddhas such as Amitabha, who reside in their own heavens or pure lands. Many sects developed out of Mahayana. They spread across Asia into Nepal, Tibet, and China. From China, Buddhism moved into Japan in the 6th century. Japan embraced several forms of Buddhism: pure land, the esoteric Shingon tradition, and Zen. The word Zen means meditation. Zen practice is based on the idea of sudden and direct insight into the nature of things. Teachers often give students problems or puzzles to solve called koans. A koan might be compared in some ways to a parable. Perhaps the most famous koan in the West is, "What is the sound of one hand clapping?" Koans are designed to force students beyond thinking into more direct experience. Like many Buddhist practices, the concept of koans is difficult for non-Buddhists to understand. Helen Twerkoff is the founder of Tricycle, the first non-sectarian Buddhist magazine.
There's a very famous koan about a Zen story about a teacher who, I believe, loses his own teacher. His own teacher dies, and the teacher's crying, sobbing. And the students are saying to him, "Well, you know, if you're so detached and you have the big view and there's life and death and there's no real distinction, it's all transformation and change, how come you're sitting here crying?" And he said, "When you're sad, you cry."
Two major types of Zen developed in Japan: the Soto, or gradual tradition, and the Rinzai, or sudden tradition. Robert Aitken's Diamond Sangha in Hawaii teaches Soto Zen, incorporating some elements of Rinzai.
Today, the conventional Rinzai student focuses upon a theme, an existential question, which can only be resolved by careful attention over a long period of time. What are we? Where do we come from? Where are we going? Other questions related to the essential nature of the human being and all beings. These are very condensed interrogative metaphors that have proved very effective down through the ages in helping people to see into the mystery of their lives. The other main stream within Zen Buddhism is the Soto stream, which also emerged about that same time in the Tang period. It was a stream that developed a practice of sitting without a theme, the practice of pure sitting, where one just sits and faces the empty stage, so to speak, and the stage isn't there.
Zen is part of the so-called northern transmission of Buddhism, Mahayana, that swept out of India into Tibet, Nepal, China, Korea, and Japan. The southern transmission is called Theravada.
From a historical point of view, the Buddhism in Southeast Asia is called the Theravadan tradition, which means the teachings of the elders, and tends to be somewhat more conservative, perhaps. And the Buddhism in Japan and in Tibet and parts of China is called the Mahayana, or the Great Vehicle, and that has the idea that you can't be enlightened alone. That the central figure for the Mahayana is the Bodhisattva, who takes a vow not to enter enlightenment without taking everybody along with him or her. And since sentient beings are numberless, the Bodhisattva is kind of a heroic warrior, a spiritual warrior who works in the world, who says, I'm going to stay in the world, has realized the truth of, has woken up fully, but is not going off to Nirvana or any place just to enjoy it. And then in Tibet, there's a what's called Tantric Buddhism, primarily in Tibet, but also there are schools of that in Japan and China, and that's actually a branch of Mahayana, which uses particular strategies or skillful means.
Tantric or Vajrayana Buddhism is practiced mostly in Tibet. It is characterized by ritual, imagery, yogic practices, and the importance of the guru or guide. Tantric practitioners use breathing exercises and visualization combined with a mantra, a powerful evocation of sound. Of the three major Buddhist schools, Mahayana, Vajrayana or Tantra, and Theravada, Theravada is the oldest. This is the Buddhism of Sri Lanka, Burma, Laos, and Thailand. Kampuchea, formerly known as Cambodia, once had a strong Theravadan tradition that has been all but wiped out by the Khmer Rouge. Theravada Buddhism is practiced in the United States mostly by Southeast Asian immigrants and Vipassana practitioners.
There were 5 million monks in China and nuns. There were great numbers of Buddhists throughout Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand, and so forth. Now, with civil war in Sri Lanka, civil war in Burma, the modernization of Thailand and Japan, the wars in Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos, there's hardly any Buddhism left except for Thailand and Burma, and that is under siege.
Some Asian Buddhists see the West as a repository of sorts for their ancient wisdom and cultures, a place to preserve traditions that, in many cases, are threatened in their native countries. Most of the Westerners practicing Theravadan Buddhism are practitioners of a very Americanized form of Theravada, called Vipassana meditation.
I was born as a Buddhist, because I'm Japanese. American people have a totally different idea on Buddhism. You know, for us, Buddhism is more like a Chinese character. And also Buddhism in Japan is all related with death and, you know, funeral. And also I'm very interested in most of American interest in Buddhism is very much, you know, psychological way. They pick up Buddhism as a kind of therapy. Once I went to a Vipassana workshop and then 4 days and something like that, you know, walking, sitting meditation, 4 days and silence. And I was pretty impressed because there's no Asian form in it. It's no in Asian chanting. I mean, just Kanji Zai Bosa Gyoji Hanya Haramitaji, or not that kind of chanting. Also, not Asian form, you know, bow, or it's nothing. It's very much verbal teaching in English and kind of sitting, direct kind of experience. Learning something through your body, and also English words, and no form, and no ritual, and Asian form. But still, that was Buddhism.
Asian Americans, even though they may have been born as the Buddhist homes, and Buddhist families, and Buddhist kind of environment, many of them are not brought up with the Buddhist kind of education. So that they come and they have a kind of a rather ecclesiastical kind of attitude to Buddhism, and they just go to church on Sundays and maybe have Buddhist funerals or burning incense, and it's a kind of Buddhism is just a religion which they would perform on occasional days like on holidays or festivals.
Buddhism once again taking on a new face, adapting to a new culture, constantly evolving, changing, adapting, mirroring its host culture, and mirroring the very doctrine it espouses, impermanence. By emphasizing practice rather than dogma, and morality rather than formality, it is able to weave its way into the fabric of a society. And there is much in the current state of the nation and in the American character that welcomes a new approach to living.
This is a country which formed with the idea of the frontier, and many of you know the intellectual thesis that the closing of the American frontier is responsible for much of what American culture is going through right now.
Bob Rosenbaum practices Zen and psychotherapy.
Many of us who seek Buddhist paths or other meditative paths are looking for another frontier, and it is a very American trait, and I think a kind of hopeful one. There's another American trait which I think has to do with spontaneity and naturalness. And the idea of the quest and the seeking and the struggle for good and evil, of course, is embodied in so much of American literature and philosophy. What else in America is fertile ground? There's transcendentalism. Transcendentalism deals with illusion, as Buddhism does. There's a large tradition of the self who is one with the universe, not the personal self, the transcendental self, true self. Walt Whitman's work comes to mind readily.
In the faces of men and women I see God, and I hear and behold God in every object. Why should I wish to see God better than this day, asks the poet. I see something of God each hour of the 24 and each moment then. He also adds significantly, yet I understand God not in the least. Walt Whitman, the 19th century poet of spiritual democracy, explained that he wrote his major work, Leaves of Grass, to affirm, and I quote, "The wisdom, health, mystery, beauty of every process, every concrete object, every human or other existence, not only considered from the point of view of all, but of each."
We live in a very confused and troubled world right now. I think ecological issues and political issues have sort of, over the last generation, sort of fallen off the edge of what was going on and developing for many generations, and suddenly we find ourselves in a new and very frightening and confusing situation.
Norman Fisher is a Zen priest and head abbot of the San Francisco Zen Center.
And it's my belief that spiritual practice has a lot to offer in general in that situation. I think that Buddhism, because it has survived intact in Asia over all these generations with an organized mystical way of accessing spiritual practice, has a lot to offer right now in the West particularly. And what that is a way of practicing that's relevant to you regardless of your spiritual orientation. Whether you're an atheist or a Christian or a Jew, you can meditate, you can learn something about the ethical teachings of Buddhism, and it's not in any way a requirement that you be a quote-unquote Buddhist.
Buddhism is beginning to be recognized as the matrix of a lot of civilizational wisdom from various Eastern civilizations, that America, as in some sense a more young and in a way less sophisticated civilization, in spite of all of our machines, but on certain psychological, spiritual, and social and ethical levels, we are rather unsophisticated and we're still a rather brutal culture, actually, and a rather violent culture.
Robert Thurman teaches at Columbia University. He was the first American to be ordained as a Tibetan Buddhist monk.
And so Americans are beginning to realize that it's not just sort of Buddhism like a simple idea or a simple meditative practice, but that we have to approach all of these older, more ancient civilizations, and that there's a lot that we can learn from them more than just meditating. And this is what is beginning, it's a more mature phase, I would say, of Buddhism. And in fact, therefore makes the impact, and it's a useful phase, and it makes the impact of Buddhism in American society much larger than the little wedge that you might think was there if you're looking for denominational Buddhists.
There are many characteristics of the American spirit and landscape that might predispose us to exploring new ways of looking at the world, new religions, and new philosophies. There's also much in the American psyche that resists certain aspects of Buddhism as it's practiced, or as Americans imagine it to be practiced. For example, American emphasis on the individual, on the good life in material terms and our attitudes towards authority. Buddhist scholar Stephen Rockefeller.
The ideals that inspired the American and French democratic revolutions were freedom, equality, and community. Fundamental to these beliefs is a conviction regarding the absolute worth and inherent dignity of the individual human being. Now, in its doctrine that all persons possess Buddha nature, Buddhism too affirms the absolute worth of the individual human being, but in its own unique way. Buddhism also challenges the Western view of the absolute worth of the human being as too narrow, too anthropocentric. In this Buddhist perspective, which has received special emphasis in Japanese Buddhism, we live in a sacramental universe, and Buddha nature is not confined to human beings. Buddhist insight and sensitivities in this regard suggest a cosmology that converges with that of contemporary ecologists and environmentalists, as well as Native American traditions. Accordingly, it calls for a radical expansion of the American sense of identity and community. Buddhism is a force today encouraging an integration of the ethics of democracy with the ethics of sustainable development.
I think there are certain aspects of American culture which are extremely inimical to Buddhist, to translating or creating a Buddhist culture here. And there are some which are very compatible.
Bob Rosenbaum.
One of the aspects which is inimical to the Buddhist experience is the mass aspect of American culture. Observers from outside America, range back from the time of de Tocqueville, have talked about America as a mass culture. American observers such as John Stuart Mill have worried about the tyranny of the majority. And there is an aspect of American culture which asks everyone to be alike and everyone to be the same. You know, the massive football games, the current political elections, where you don't even talk about the issues, but you talk about how they're talking about the issues and who's winning, and you know, it's all these polls, and you can hardly tell who is who. And this kind of mass culture, and the mass culture, which is part of watching television and going to football games and not being a participant, but being a spectator, is, I think, deeply inimical to Buddhism. Buddhism is inherently a participatory phenomenon. That's one of the reasons it attracts many Americans.
Particularly in America, where people are more hurried than ever, you know, more busy than ever, rather, people don't really have time to really kind of sit down and study, and so it becomes more difficult to really inform the teachings in one session or so. After teaching for about 20 years now, that I'm now becoming more comfortable and seeing more clearly a way in which perhaps we can do away with, not so much do away with kind of rather ruthlessly, the tradition, it's not at all, because that's where there's nothing to do away with anyway, because it is only a means to help. So therefore, I feel more comfortable that there is perhaps a way we can simplify.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the one who shows me the way in this life.
One of the most distinguishing aspects of Buddhism in the United States is its meeting with feminism. I would say it's meeting with two forces in our society. One is psychology, and the other is feminism. Nowhere in the Asian world has this been a factor in Buddhist institutions, and suddenly it comes to the United States, and here it is.
Sandy Boucher is the author of Turning the Wheel, A History of Women in Buddhism.
What this could mean is that it might be possible in this country to establish a truly egalitarian form of Buddhism, which has never existed anywhere. So you would have at least the form of this major world religion that we practice here would be really inclusive of women and really egalitarian. So you would have as many women leaders as men. You would be even altering many of the practices to allow for the full participation of women, of mothers, of householders, of all that kind of thing. American Buddhism is essentially a lay Buddhism. Mm-hmm.